Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Peter Hammond from Frontline Fellowship, which, of course, operates throughout Africa, centered in Cape Town. But certainly Peter has a ministry and helpers all throughout the African continent as they bring the word of the Lord to people in literally every country there, most of the countries. Now, of course, Peter is on a tour of the United States, and usually when he comes, why, he lets us know ahead of time. We always enjoy having him on, and we just want you to understand what is going on in Africa, because it's all been created by your State Department. Your State Department placed the murderous dictator in control of Zimbabwe. His name is Robert Mugabe. We put him there over 30 years ago, and Henry Kissinger promised the people there they had nothing to worry about, that America would see that Sydney, everything ran smoothly, and if it didn't, America would intervene. If their farms were threatened, America would buy their farms so they could leave. Nothing to worry about, just trust the United States and the people there. Trusted the United States, Henry Kissinger speaking for the United States, and well, we'll talk about what happened. Certainly, the United States State Department placed Nelson Mandela in power in Africa. Nelson Mandela was a lifelong terrorist, contrary to, of course, whatever you hear in the media here, but you can see the pictures of him. We have many of them standing in front of the communist flag with his raised clenched fist. He was a lifelong terrorist who was kept in Robben Island because he refused to announce terrorism. He was always a terrorist, and of course things weren't quite as bad when he was in control in South Africa, but now they're going bad to worse. But I'm going to let Peter tell you what's going on. Peter, thanks very much for being with us, and remember, this is the new audience, so you feel at liberty to repeat what you've said before.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless you for the work that you do, and praise God for community radio stations that are giving an alternative to the brainwashing and superficial nonsense that seems to predominate in so much of the mass media. We do need to know the truth, and I realize that there's so much distortion of what's going on in Africa. Most people have heard a fairy tale that once upon a time everyone lived in peace and harmony and democratic tranquility in Africa, and then along came the evil whites and the demonic Boers who invented racial discrimination, and the people suffered, and then came Nelson Mandela, and everyone lived happily ever after. And this is a fairy tale that's believed by a surprising amount of gullible people. But I see there was a film that came out recently, Invictus, which was making out that Nelson Mandela was some kind of messiah and, you know, some wonderful democratic icon and example that everyone would want to have as a grandfather. But they left out a whole lot of key things, like all that he did for communism and terrorism, and all the white farmers that have been murdered since he came to power and opened the prison doors and let a lot of people out, including murderers and rapists, who have continued to terrorize the people. Since Nelson Mandela became president in South Africa in 1994, well over 3,000 white farmers have been torturously murdered and mutilated.
But isn't it amazing? We never hear about that here in this country. In fact, we never hear about most of the important things going on in South Africa or in Zimbabwe. Oh, occasionally there's an article in the newspaper, but you always get the impression, well, you know, America's trying to get these things straightened out. It's all going to work out in the end, but it's not working out. What's the unemployment rate in South Africa? Because certainly when I was there, lived there in the mid-1970s, all the blacks had jobs. Certainly nobody was going hungry. What's happening in South Africa today?
Well, unemployment is very high. It's pushing up towards 40-45%. But across the board in Zimbabwe, it's over 90% unemployment. So, you know, there's as many people out of work as in work.
Hold that thought. Go right ahead, Peter.
Yes, there's just such an incredible undermining of every level of society and civilization in South Africa. You know, if you think back to Africa in the 1950s, it was a paradise. You could travel from one side of Africa to the other without a passport, on smooth, safe roads, without having to run the gauntlet through roadblocks or checkpoints as you have to now. And it's extraordinary how the stability of Africa, where nobody starved back in the old days under Rhodesia or the colonial administrations, and any of the problems people might have had in the past, they just pale compared to the massacres and oppression that has predominated since decolonization. And this is something that the United States State Department pushed on the European government straight after the Second World War as a primary goal to get Europe out of Africa. And who filled the vacuum? The Soviet Union and Red China poured into the vacuum. So when Britain and Portugal and France and Belgium pulled out, the Russians and the Chinese moved in. And tens of millions of Africans have been slaughtered by the dictatorships there since. And, of course, even more have died of starvation. Because once you start to murder the farmers, naturally famine is going to be one of the results. And I saw this. I was born in Africa. I've been raised in Africa. I'm now 50 years old, so I've lived my whole life in Africa. And I was brought up in Rhodesia. I saw the paradise of Rhodesia destroyed and turned into the communist hellhole that it is now, Zimbabwe. And that was a direct result of Henry Kissinger's policies through the State Department. And so people need to know what happened. We were operating a very efficient economy in Africa. Things were working well. People were safe and free and peaceful. Nobody bothered to lock their doors at night. We never even bothered to shut the doors or the windows at night.
And let me just point out that in Rhodesia, there was no apartheid. Blacks had the same rights as whites did. They had a franchise. You had to either have own property or an education before you could vote. But other than that, they had blacks owned property. They had cars. They had businesses. The blacks were prospering. The whites were prospering. The whites were the farmers. They were doing a wonderful job. They were producing food for all of Africa, or certainly.
Indeed. Rhodesia had a qualified franchise, either education or property ownership, and there was no racial discrimination as such in Rhodesia because whites and blacks could be anywhere. I remember such thing as segregated cinemas or swimming pools, anything like that. It was all a very multiracial country, and there was good race relations in Rhodesia. But what happened in 1980 when the British and Americans betrayed the Rhodesians into the hands of Robert Mugabe's Marxist terrorists is massacre. Massacres began. First, they started to massacre tens of thousands of Madibili, and I've
hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Peter was talking about how after the American State Department forced the Rhodesian people to accept this dictator Mugabe, I mean, they started these slaughters, and they slaughtered thousands of the Matabele, thousands of the blacks, and this was all done while America was looking on, talking about how it was wonderful. Now we have democracy in Rhodesia, but of course you'd replaced a representative government there with now a Marxist dictatorship. He was brought to power and financed by the American State Department, Henry Kissinger, and they've kept him in power ever since, and they're keeping him in power today. But we can't let the people here in America know that. Supposedly, oh, we feel so badly about what's going on over there. We're financing it, ladies and gentlemen. We're financing it with your tax dollars. Go right ahead, Peter.
Well, unfortunately, you're quite right, Dr. Stan, because none of these dictatorships in Africa would be able to stand on their own, because they've destroyed their own economies. You can't destroy the farms and destroy the agricultural foundation of a nation and then expect to be able to stay in power unless you have overseas foreign aid. And it's the foreign aid from the European Union and the United Nations and the United States aid, US aid, and then the IMF, which US taxpayers are a major sponsor of. These are what are keeping these unelected mass-murdering thugs and dictators in power in one country after the other, where the people are suffering. Now, I'm not just talking about this academically. I've been bombed while preaching in church in Sudan. I've been under artillery and rocket fire while preaching in churches in Sudan. Our mission base has been bombed 10 times just in Sudan by the Sudan Air Force. We've come under fire. We've been ambushed. I've ended up in prison in some of these places and seen how the prisoners have absolutely no rights. We were locked in hellholes with no water, no running water, no sanitation, no plumbing, no toilets, no means of cleaning yourself, absolutely no access to soap, no ventilation. 60 prisoners crammed into a cell 25 feet by 15 feet. Imagine 60 to 65 prisoners in a cell that small, the size of an average bedroom, and there's not a bed, there's no blankets, there's no pillows or sheets. It's just a disease factory, filthy, degrading disease factory. And I've been locked up in conditions like that and seen the people tortured by their own government, none of whom had ever come to trial, who had ever been charged. This is just rule by lawless Marxists, and every one of these Marxist dictatorships are kept in power by the IMF and the World Bank and US aid and foreign aid and the European Union's aid, and all of these foreign aid bailouts are keeping these unelected dictators in place where they would have otherwise had to collapse. And we, nowhere is this clearer than in Zimbabwe, where the country has no economy. The country has totally destroyed the economy to the point where today one brick costs more than all the houses, homes, and farms combined would have cost back in the days of Rhodesia. When I was brought up in Rhodesia, one Rhodesian dollar could buy $3 American. You needed $3 American to buy one Rhodesian dollar. It was that stronger currency. Today, it's trillions and trillions of Zimbabwe dollars to one American dollar, and they've already knocked 16 zeros off the currency, and it's still trillions and trillions. Never in the history of the world has there been such rampant, out-of-control inflation as you get in Zimbabwe. I've never heard of another country where half of the total population have fled, voted with their feet, and left the country. There's more Zimbabweans outside of Zimbabwe than in it. When in the history of the world has this happened before? And this destabilization continues with the aid of the international community, because billions of US dollars and euros are every year going into Zimbabwe to prop up this unelected mass murdering dictator who has slaughtered the white farmers, destroyed the farms, slaughtered the Matabele, and has bludgeoned his own people into submission. The opposition party in Zimbabwe has gotten vastly more votes than the government, but they're kept out of power. The government is obviously not a government, it's a dictatorship. They have been rejected by the voters on every occasion since the year 2000, but they stay in power, and Mugabe is welcomed to the United Nations and applauded and given standing ovations and more handouts and bailouts from Western governments to keep him in power.
American tax dollars at work, ladies and gentlemen, American tax dollars at work. This is the result, of course, of your State Department and of Henry Kissinger and of the establishment that runs our country. And the fact that you've never heard this before is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. And, of course, the tragedy of Rhodesia, I mean, there's no education, there's very little medical care, you can't get medical supplies. The only people, of course, get anything there is the elite who are financed by your government in your tax dollars and in the name of humanitarian relief. And, of course, then there are thug police and there are thug military who rape and torture the people there. And over half the people have already fled the country. American tax dollars at work. Go right ahead.
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, I know that many people have heard the fiction and myth that Nelson Mandela is a modern saint and a wonderful man. And it's amazing just to have seen this recent film, Invictus, which Clint Eastwood directed. And I really had hoped for better from him. But this was just major mythology. And yet the facts about Nelson Mandela are these. And I think most people do need to realize the fact that Nelson Mandela did write the book How to Be a Good Communist, and he did legalize abortion. Nelson Mandela pushed through abortion against all opposition. The vast majority of the population of South Africa was against abortion on demand, and yet he pushed it through and made it a requirement. Every one of his members of parliament, the ANC, had to vote for it, even against their own conscience. He wouldn't allow a conscience vote on this. And so he pushed it through. He legalized pornography. He tried to legalize prostitution, although the Supreme Court overturned that later. He kicked out the Bible and prayer out of government. Our parliament had for 128 years opened in prayer in the name of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, but the first act when Mandela became president was no prayer, not even a moment of silence for the opening of parliament. And not only that, the Bible was kicked out of schools, prayer was outlawed in our schools, secular humanism brought in. It's just been even getting the Planned Parenthood, one of the most vociferous pro-abortion groups in the world, to run sex education in our schools. Now, this is the Nelson Mandela, who is not normally being portrayed to people. Many people think Nelson Mandela is a Christian, but I've met him, I've spoken to him, I spent over an hour speaking to him when he summoned me after I'd marched 30,000 people in protest against his evil policies of legalizing abortion and pornography. I marched 30,000 people to protest that outside his office. So he summoned me to his home to try and talk me out of our stand, and during that time I asked him straight. I said, "Are you a Christian?" And he said, "No, he is not." And I asked, "What is his personal religious convictions?" And he refused to answer and said, "That's very personal. He doesn't want to answer that." And Mandela has openly supported the most brutal communist dictatorships on the planet, like Fidel Castro's Cuba, Robert Mugabe's Zimbabwe, Red China, Gaddafi's Libya, Saddam Hussein, Yasser Arafat. All these dictators have been welcomed and kissed and hugged by Nelson Mandela and given the greatest ovations and support in South Africa. So it's incredible that so many Americans, including Christians, continue to idolize Nelson Mandela and quote him like he is an example of some kind of Christianity that we should follow. And yet the reality is very, very different.
And yet, when he became the premier or president of South Africa, and when he was inaugurated, there were all the communists from all over the world coming to celebrate, and Hillary Clinton was there too. Go right ahead.
Indeed. I noticed that in Invictus, they made a big thing about Nelson Mandela being imprisoned for 30 years. Well, actually, it was 26, but I suppose the math isn't that good. But then they make never any mention of why he was in prison. He was the head of Umkhonto we Sizwe, the terrorist wing of the ANC. And under him, there had been decades of vicious terrorist warfare, burning down of schools, hacking to death of thousands of innocent people, pouring gasoline over 1,000 innocent victims, setting them alight, and he supported the armed struggles, as he called it, of the ANC. He was, in fact, in charge of Umkhonto we Sizwe. The brutal necklace murders that killed black town councillors, black mayors, the car bombs in public streets, limpet mines in shopping centers, petrol bombs, grenades, assassinations. And all of this is not mentioned. But they keep mentioning how the whites locked him up in prison, as though he was locked up just because he was black or just because he was in opposition to the government or something.
Why was he ever tried for murder? I mean, certainly he was responsible for those murders.
Yes, he
ordered them. Why was he never tried for murder?
He was, and he was tried in court and pleaded guilty to 156 acts of public violence and terrorism. And he was Nelson Mandela was a trained lawyer, like Clinton. He's a lawyer. And he stood up there and said he pleaded guilty to all these charges, so he never contested any of this, and he was very proud of his involvement. And they sentenced him to life imprisonment. And all the newspapers, including the New York Times and the London Times, praised South African government and judges for such a lenient sentence on the man, because at that time, in 1964, a person would have been hung in Britain or electrocuted in America for similar offenses. And they said at the time how lenient South Africa was by only giving him a life imprisonment. But later, he suddenly became a political prisoner in the minds of so many in the West, even though at the time, nobody doubted in 1964 that he had got a very, very lenient sentence. And now, today, we have Clint Eastwood producing a movie, idolizing Nelson Mandela, making it out that the man was some innocent grandfather locked up for no good reason at all.
Shame on Clint Eastwood. He should have done his homework before putting out that propagandic campaign, for the World Communist Movement.
Indeed, so. I wrote an article, Invictus Idolatry, which has gotten a lot of reaction. It's on our www.frontline.org.za website. So if anyone wants to see a film review giving the other side of Nelson Mandela, it's on Invictus Idolatry. That's the article under film reviews on the frontline.org.za website.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, what you have to understand, you're not going to get the truth from the controlled media in America. We have freedom of the press. That means the people who control the media and Hollywood have the ability to distort truth any way they want to. And, of course, they simply withhold the truth, the fact that Nelson Mandela was a vicious communist who was responsible for literally thousands of murders, burning people to death, necklacing. What a horrible way to die. And yet we eulogize Nelson Mandela and this latest Clint Eastwood movie. It's really such a tragedy that Clint doesn't understand that he is utilizing a vicious, inhumane murderer. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, go right ahead, Peter.
Well, just something else that one should mention at this time, Dr. Stan, is in this Invictus idolatry, it really portrays all the whites in South Africa as cardboard cutout, two-dimensional people with absolutely no depth at all. And the only character in the whole film that has any depth is Nelson Mandela. And it does show the danger of the so-called this-is-a-true-story film, where the names and the places are true, but only the facts have been changed to protect the guilty. And so many people today don't read history books, don't know what's going on in the world, but they trust Hollywood and CNN for their reality and for their perspective of what's going on. And, of course, it's a distortion of reality. It's not reality at all. And it's an illusion that's been given. And if people would just either visit the country, see for themselves, or read reliable materials from missions and those who don't have an axe to grind but are being objective observers, they would see a totally different reality. Most people don't realize that South Africa is the number one missionary-sending country in the Southern Hemisphere. My city of Cape Town has been the number one Bible-printing city in the whole world until fairly recently. And literally, the more Bibles and more languages printed in Cape Town than anywhere else. South Africa is a major missionary-sending country. And the communist takeover of South Africa and the betrayal of South Africa has undermined missions and the cause of Christianity throughout the continent of Africa. And now this country has been bludgeoned by paganization. And it was something that the communists could never have done on their own. They couldn't have beaten us. We beat them in the field every time. Militarily, we always won. The South African Defense Force never lost. But South Africa can say we were never beaten by our enemies. We were betrayed by our friends.
And of course, your major friend was the United States. And I'll never forget going to visit with John Forster. You remember John Forster when he was the premier?
Yes.
And I spent about an hour with him and kept telling him he couldn't trust the United States. And he looked at me very sadly and he said, "I know that, but there's nothing we can do. There's nothing we can do." This was probably about 1976. And he knew all about the Council on Foreign Relations. He knew all about our establishment. And he knew, of course, the close relationship between our leaders and the communists. I'll never forget what he said. He said, "You know, when you sup with the devil, you have to have a very long spoon. And I fear that America's spoon is not long enough."
Yes, and of course, the United States has been an enormous influence for betraying its best friends and allies, whether you're talking about Chiang Kai-shek's China into the hands of Red China, whether you're talking about the Shah of Iran to the hands of the Ayatollah, or Batista into the hands of Castro in Cuba, or Somoza at the hands of the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, or Ian Smith's government in Rhodesia into the hands of Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF scum. But in time after time, we have seen America betraying its best friends, the pro-Western allies, into the hands of its communist enemies. And I heard it said very well once by Jonas Savimbi, the Angolan freedom fighter of UNITA who fought the Cubans. Jonas Savimbi said very sadly, because he loved America and what America truly stood for, even as he despised the State Department. And he said, "It is better to be America's enemy than America's friend. Because if you're America's enemy, you may be bought. But if you're America's friend, you will certainly be sold." And he then turned to me and he said, as a joke, to lighten the situation, he said, "Do you know why there hasn't been a revolution in America for over 200 years? I said, "No." And he said, "Because there isn't any American embassy in America."
Well, Jonas Savimbi was a very, very brave man. He was murdered by a communist special forces unit?
Yes.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Peter was talking about how America has betrayed its friends over and over again. But people must understand that the America that has betrayed the people of Cuba, bringing Fidel Castro to power, or the America that betrayed Somoza in Nicaragua, the America that betrayed the Rhodesian people or the South African people, or China into the hands of the communists. Really, it's not the America that we recognize. recognize there is an invisible government. It works with the Council on Foreign Relations, more recently the Trilateral Commission in Bilderbergers, and they control our State Department. It doesn't matter whether the Republicans or the Democrats are there. They always are in charge. And, of course, they want a world government. That's their major goal. But behind that are the powerful spiritual forces that energize the evil that is being done. And until the American people charge these people with treason and subversion, and they're removed from every level of our government and their control of our monetary system and our media, why, of course, there's no hope either for America or the world, because as America goes, so goes the world, and they are using our financial and military power to bring about this wonderful world socialist system that every communist and every globalist and these people of great wealth want. And, of course, behind that are the powerful spiritual forces which energize them, which most people do not understand. Go right ahead, Peter.
Well, Dr. Stan, I should mention something else that should be of interest. I was recently in Switzerland celebrating the 500th anniversary of John Calvin, and we had big Reformation celebrations there. And I happened to be sitting down with Faith Whittlesley. She used to be America's ambassador to Switzerland back in the Reagan era. And she told me that there is a war on against Switzerland right now, an economic war that the United States government and the European Union are waging economic war and disinformation campaigns against Switzerland, trying to destroy Swiss independence. Now, Switzerland, as you know, is the oldest republic in the world, well over 700 years. And Switzerland has it's probably one of the freest populations in the world and one of the most armed and very freedom-loving people and a very decentralized country. But the U.S. State Department is at this time engaged in a very subversive campaign of trying to undermine Switzerland economically, as is the EU. And one of the things they're demanding is that Americans who have accounts in Switzerland be exposed, that the Swiss government's going to break their own law by giving confidential information about their banking clients to a foreign government, which, of course, is a blatant interference in the independence of Switzerland. But in order to force Switzerland to join the European Union, the EU is waging another economic war against them, too. So they're being hit on all sides. And I don't think I've read about that in any newspaper anywhere. But when I brought this up to some Swiss people and said, you know, is this true? And several Christian Swiss businessmen I spoke to said, no, this is definitely true. Switzerland is being under relentless attack by both the European Union and by the United States State Department, and it's economic warfare, and it's a lot of disinformation campaigns. And it's not too strong a term to call it war, because it's as though your government has declared war on this freedom-loving, independent state of Switzerland.
Well, of course, we've done this time and again. We brought the Marxists to power in Nepal recently. We're installing dictatorships in Pakistan. Certainly, there's a dictator in Afghanistan. The government there in Iraq is certainly not representative of the people. It's simply the power elite there. And, of course, we've managed to create a government under Sharia law. Before that, it was secular. You could believe whatever you want to. But after we installed the Muslim Sharia law government in Iraq, they drove the Christians out. Christians have been forced out. Why would we go in and overthrow a secular government that tolerated Christianity and install a Muslim government under Sharia law that doesn't tolerate Christianity? You have to ask yourself, what's really going on in the world today? And I feel sorry for the Swiss people. Let's hope and pray that they can hold out against the wicked people in the American State Department, who will bring all nations under the control of this one world government and under the control of the American empire. We have an empire. We have troops in 130 to 140 nations throughout the world. And nobody ever asked, why do we have all those troops all throughout the world? Why are we going to war with Iran? Why are we still fighting in Afghanistan when there's only 100 members of Al-Qaeda there? What's really going on in the world? Well, listen to what Peter has to say, because he has an insight from Africa that you're not going to get elsewhere. Go ahead, Peter.
Well, Dr. Stan, we've been deeply concerned as to why Africa, when it was a paradise and stable, would have been so undermined. And the only answer we can get to is that it seems that there's this new world order plan of massive population control. And I've had military intelligence officials discussing this with me, saying that the reason why the farmers are being targeted in our country is to be able to bring down agricultural production, to increase famine, death, to bring down human population. And that just sounded too incredible. I said,
well, it's not incredible at all, Peter. Hold on, we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, go right ahead, Peter. You were just saying the military intelligence officers had come to you, and you thought it was impossible. And, of course, if you listen to my program all the time, you know it's not impossible. It's what they really intend to do. They really do intend to kill off most of the people in the world, and they've targeted the blacks primarily.
Well, yes. I mean, you just consider Rhodesia. Rhodesia had one of the finest agricultural economies, incredibly efficient, with the highest standard of literacy on the continent, with some of the best educated Africans anywhere. And Rhodesia gets handed over to Marxist terrorists who then bludgeon the nation and start to invade white farms. And there were 5,400 effective commercial farms, which were the biggest employers in the country. They produced enough food not only to feed the whole of Zimbabwe, but to export food and to bring the greatest amount of foreign exchange earnings. And so the white farmers of Zimbabwe were in fact a treasure to the nation and was the economic dynamo that made Zimbabwe work. And it was self-destructive. It was a national suicide to invade these farms and destroy these farms and to destroy the productivity. And of course, famine followed. And most of the population of Zimbabwe have fled since because the famine is real. And now in South Africa, under Nelson Mandela's African National Congress, they have officials singing, high-up officials in the ANC singing, kill the Boer, kill the farmer. Kill the Boer, kill the farmer. One farmer, one bullet. And they are literally rejoicing in the deaths of farmers. Now, we recently had a very prominent Afrikaans leader, Eugene de Blanche, who had come to Christ recently, too, for that matter, torturously mutilated and murdered in his bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. And this just highlighted that over 3,000 white farmers have been murdered since Nelson Mandela became president. That makes the white farmers in South Africa the most vulnerable section of population in anywhere in the world. Nowhere is there a group of people more vulnerable to murder than white farmers in South Africa, and are obviously being targeted. What made this even more shocking was that the president of the Youth League of the ANC, that's Julius Malema, apparently had on his Facebook a counter where they were literally rejoicing over the number of farmers at that stage, 3,086, murdered. And so he couldn't say that his songs and his speeches were unrelated to reality, that farmers actually were getting killed in response to the rabble-rousing of political leaders. And our Supreme Court recently decreed that this song, Kill the Farmer, Kill the Boers, was racist hate speech and unconstitutional.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, our guest is Peter Hammond. And before I go on, Peter, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with Frontline Ministry and how they can find out where you're speaking. You're going to be speaking all across the country here over this next 3 or 4 weeks. And certainly how they can get in touch with, if you have a talk in their area, they might be able to attend. But how can they get in touch with your ministry? And we might add that Barbara and I, my wife, we support Frontline Ministry. We appreciate what Peter's doing. We love South Africa, having lived there for a number of years. We're not in a position to go off and be missionaries today. So why, of course, we want to help those who are on the front lines. And Peter, believe me, is on the front line. Frontline Ministry, Frontline Fellowship. Go right ahead. How can people get in touch with you?
Dr. Stan, I'm going to be speaking in Orlando this coming Saturday morning at a men's breakfast and then church in the in the morning at St. Andrews in Stanford in Orlando. I'm going to be at Dallas-Fort Worth for a conference on discernment, and that's going to be next week's Friday and Saturday. I'll be in Colorado Springs thereafter at Summit Ministries. If people want the exact details, they can contact our office in California. It's email info@frontlinefellowship.net. That's info@frontlinefellowship.net. The telephone number is 866-785-7210. That's 866-785-7210. Or you can check upcoming events on frontline.org.za website.
All right, fine. Well, Chris, you were just saying, Sydney, that they killed so many of the farmers, drove them out of South Africa. They're driving them out of Rhodesia today, but in South Africa. Why, of course, so they've killed over 3,000 of the farmers there. What happened to the two men who killed this Afrikaans leader?
Oh, they're very proud of it, and they turned themselves in, and they think they're going to be folk heroes for doing it. And at this stage, it remains to be seen if justice will be served in any way. But what we do know is that the president of the country and the president of the ANC Youth League are ignoring the Constitutional Court's decree that the Kill the Boer, Kill the Farmer song is racist hate speech and is unconstitutional. And they're continuing to sing it, and farmers are continuing to be murdered, showing that it seems the rule of law is not being respected in our country, and that people talking about farm invasions, Zimbabwe style, in South Africa. Now, this is the situation. In 1994, when Nelson Mandela took over South Africa, there were 70,000 white farmers, just 70,000 commercial white farmers, but they were feeding 100 million people throughout the continent of Africa, as far as the Congo. People were eating maize grown in Orange Free State and food that came from all over South Africa. So the Transvaal and Free State have phenomenally effective farming communities. However, with over 3,000 farmers having been torturously murdered and mutilated in recent years since the Mandela ANC took over, we now have less than 25,000 commercial farmers in the country. So the number of white commercial farmers has plummeted from 70,000 down to about 25,000. And they are barely managing to feed 40 million people now. So we've got less food than the entire population of the country needs. So for the first time, South Africa is having to import food. And, of course, this is what's going to happen. If you start killing farmers and decreasing the number of commercial farmers, what's going to happen? Famine. Who's now feeding people in those other countries now that the Rhodesian and the South African white farmers have been so diminished and decimated? And one of the results is there's a massive increasing of people moving as refugees to other areas, and there's a great increase in famine. There's more people dying. And I'm informed by people in military intelligence that there are actually people in the New World Order, United Nations population control crowd, who want this to take place, who want there to be a few hundred million less people in the world. And one of the quickest ways of getting rid of a lot of people is famine, and the obstacle is these efficient farmers. So getting rid of the farmers isn't a national suicide as we would think of it, but it's all part of the social engineering to bring about a new world order.
I really wish we were only going to get rid of a couple of hundred million. I believe they're going to get rid of billions of people, and there are people, for instance, Jacques Cousteau, the great humanitarian, used to swim with the fishes, came up with the scuba. He wanted to eliminate 350,000 people a day. We have the article in the UNESCO Courier where he's quoted as saying that. If you have a chance, read my population control agenda. It's up on the internet. Just under Stan Monteith, Radio Liberty, Population Control Agenda. It's probably the best thing up there. It needs to be updated. But they really do, Peter, intend to kill billions of people. These are not nice people we're up against. They have a different agenda, a different worldview, because I believe they worship a different God. Well, you go right ahead, Peter.
Well, yes, indeed. You know, Dr. Stan, I know that there's evidence of that, too. When I was in jail in Zambia under the Marxist leader, Kenneth Kaunda, I met a whole lot of interesting people, some of whom are now in the government of Zambia, now that Zambia has gotten rid of their socialist dictatorship and they have a Christian multi-party democracy, and Zambia is officially a Christian nation with the constitution writing in protections for the preborn, outlawing abortion, outlawing pornography, outlawing homosexuality, which is a crime, bringing the Bible and prayer back into schools, and a lot of good things are going on in Zambia, and we've been meeting with top people in the government. But I started to meet many of these people because they shared similar cells in Lusaka Central when I was locked up there. And one of those men, General Godfrey Meander, he had been locked up in Lusaka Central. He became vice president. And he told me that when they had the World Population Control Conference in Cairo, he went there as vice president of Zambia to represent the Zambian interests. And at a certain point, he had to stand up and say, to much applause from the African contingent, he said to the UN, you people are not interested in saving the lives of Africans, but only in killing us, it would seem. Under the colonials, we had far better health care than we have now with all the medical advances and with the World Health Organization. The World Health Organization doesn't seem interested in saving lives. We have, and he quotes at the numbers of how many millions die of malaria every year, how many millions die of parasitic waterborne diseases like cholera, and yet somehow or another this keeps increasing, and the very simple, cheap solutions to these things are not of any interest to the World Health Organization. But the World Health Organization only wants to provide us in Africa with condoms and abortions. He said it would appear you're more interested in killing Africans than in saving African lives. And there was a lot of applause from the people on the ground, but I bet that wasn't reported in the media here in the United States.
No, I'm sure it wasn't, and I think he's absolutely right. We've written extensively about that. That's really the reason they outlawed DDT, not because, you know, it was harmful to the environment, but because it was saving so many lives in Africa and doing away with malaria. Well, malaria is a very efficient killer.
Yes, it is. Over millions of Africans die every year of malaria. I know many people in Africa who've died of malaria. Malaria is a scourge, and yet it was effectively wiped out under the colonial regimes. In the 50s and 60s, it was very little of a problem. And in Rhodesia, it wasn't a problem at all back in the 60s and 70s. Malaria has made a tremendous comeback as decolonization has spread, and as the revolution has spread, so has death and disease.
Well, it's a tragic situation. It's hard to get people to accept that. But people, even if they do accept it, don't seem to be too concerned as long as it's happening in Africa. But I simply would point out that, you know, God is bringing his judgment on America because men and women do become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose, especially when they're being financed with our tax money.
Yes.
Go right ahead, Peter.
Well, Dr. Stan, I think Americans need to be very alert to the fact that what has happened to us in Africa is coming to you here. You're being invaded by illegal aliens. You're being destabilized by greater violence than ever before, and it's going to only increase. And, of course, this is what's got to happen. When you see how many people's homes have been destroyed and how many countries have been destroyed, those people who were happy to stay in their countries are now pouring out because of a ripple effect of destabilization, a deliberate destabilization by the United Nations, the Soviet Union, Red China, and the U.S. State Department as an accessory to all these revolutions. So the illegal alien problem you've got in your country is a direct result of the destabilizing of so many other countries around the world. And in addition to that, when you consider that you've got the most radical regime you've ever had in the White House, who are propagating some of the most radical socialist agendas, and you have people who have promoted pedophilia being put in charge of safety in your schools, and you have every kind of Marxist, socialist, radical on all sorts of levels in the country, then you've got to wonder what is going to happen. I've seen countries fall to communism. I've been now a missionary for 28 years to persecuted churches. I've worked in 30 different countries around the world, including communist Mozambique and Angola and throughout Eastern Europe and Zimbabwe. I've seen what happens when countries are taken over. And I've lost three countries. The country I grew up in, Rhodesia, is today communist Zimbabwe. The country I fought for as a soldier, Southwest Africa, is now Namibia. The South Africa that is my home is now run by Marxist revolutionaries. And it's a very traumatic experience to see your country changed, your flag changed, so much of your heritage lost, and to see beautiful, wonderful, magnificent forests chopped down, see magnificent, orderly, beautiful suburbs turned into slums, to see just the chaos caused. And if people think it can't happen here, just open your eyes. It has happened to other countries just as stable. Just think of the fact that you've got a country today called Turkey that once was the Christian Byzantine Empire, and a city called Istanbul that once was Constantinople, the greatest Christian city in the world, the largest Christian city in the world, with the largest church in the world, San Sophie, which was later turned into a mosque. The country of Byzantine, which is a Christian civilization, is today known as Turkey. And they are now talking about turning Europe into Eurabia. And you can be sure there are people who've got the same kind of plans for the United States of America. The Marxists, the Muslims, the New World Order guys, they've all got their plans, and they're not good plans. And if people don't stay armed and vigilant and alert and prepared and wake up, then these terrible revolutions that have happened in other countries will come here. You've got people in Washington right now talking revolution and doing revolution.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think we really have to be aware of the fact that within the last few months, why, of course, the jihadist, the radical form of Islam, has taken over Turkey. Before that, Turkey was a secular country, and, of course, all religions could be there. Of course, it's you, if you're an Armenian or you're a Christian, why, you really always had to be looking over your shoulder. But at least the government was secular. Then now the government there in Turkey is jihadist. It's broken its relationship with Israel. And we're talking about within the last month or so. And believe me, this is going to have a profound impact on the coming war that's going to be taking place in the Middle East. And we're going to be involved in that war, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be involved in that war because the good people in America are just too busy to be involved. Go ahead, Peter.
Well, Dr. Stan, I know that people need to be informed, and we need to be informed because my people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. We need to understand the times and know what God's people must do. We need to understand Islam. We need to understand communism. We need to know how to evangelize Muslims, how to evangelize Marxists. And I've produced two books that are particularly designed to help one on the Islam front. And one is Faith Under Fire in Sudan. We've had tremendous responses from this in the past, and we've brought out a completely new revised book, three times bigger than the previous one, 200 pictures, 300 pages, Faith Under Fire in Sudan. And it documents with graphic pictures and inspiring stories of Christian courage amidst the tremendous violence and vindictiveness of the Islamic Jihad in Sudan. While it's shocking in places, it's ultimately inspiring because the Christians have stood firm in Sudan, especially in Nub Mountains. And so that's a new resource that I think people can use to inspire their friends and neighbors and congregations to understand what's going on and to resist it. And the other is Slavery, Terrorism, and Islam, the historical roots and the contemporary threat. If anyone wants to know what's going on with Islam and the politically incorrect facts, what is the story behind the story, Slavery, Terrorism, Islam is our real best-selling book now, fourth edition out, and we're just about to do a fifth edition. And that's packed full of pictures and facts and stories and everything from the history to what's taught about Islam to how we can deal with it and defeat it.
Because, well, of course, you've had pretty good results, you know, converting a Muslim to Christianity. I mean, certainly this has been a factor in Nigeria, and certainly even in the Sudan, didn't some of the Muslims actually convert to Christianity?
Many, many. We're not just talking about hundreds now. We're talking about thousands and even tens of thousands in the case of Nigeria. There are whole churches that I know where there are more converts from a Muslim background than people from a Christian background. So, yes, the church is growing and Islam is losing people. There's a massive amount of defections of Muslims who have had enough of the violence and the intolerance and are attracted by the courage and tenacity of Christians. So in Sudan, Nigeria in particular, Christians are having great success in winning over their enemies and their neighbors to Christ. And some of the reaction of the more radical elements is to get more violence and burn down more churches because they obviously don't believe in freedom of people to change their religion. And this needs to be understood. We're continually writing about this. If people want to see our frontline publications or reports, we put out a quarterly report, Frontline Fellowship News. We send out e-updates. So if anyone wants to either check out our website at frontline.org.za or email us at info@frontlinefellowship.net. We'll keep them informed on at least what's going on in Africa. And if they need some good resources, whether DVDs, PowerPoints, or books to expose Islam or Marxism, we can certainly provide that from an African perspective.
All right, friend, and I would suggest, I've read Peter's books in the past, and they're excellent. Certainly people have to understand that the things that are happening in Africa seem so distant. But believe me, they can happen here because in many instances, it is all funded with your tax money. Certainly, the country, China Petrol was actually funding the military arm of Sudan. China Petrol was over there, of course, developing the oil reserves in the Sudan, but they were raising their money on American financial markets, $5 billion. China Petrol, then, of course, they gave it to the Muslims then, who used it to buy the armaments to kill the Christians with. And where was the outcry here in America? Why, it was deafening in its silence. So much of what goes on in throughout the rest of the world, the terrible things and the oppression of Christians is funded right out of our country.
Yes, indeed. I've been bombed while preaching in churches in Sudan, but one picture that stays in my mind so graphically is walking in Nuba Mountains, I saw a man who had no feet. His feet had been axed off at the ankles, and he was riding on a donkey with just two stumps where feet would belong. And a person might lose one foot, but how did he lose two? And I asked, and they said, oh, he's an evangelist. And the Arabs chopped off his feet to stop him taking the gospel to his neighbors. And they didn't want to just kill him. They wanted to mutilate him to be a warning to everyone who sees him, don't preach the gospel. But this man was not allowing the inconvenience of not having feet keep him from taking the gospel to his neighbors. He had calloused knees. He continued to walk on his knees or ride on his donkey to proclaim the gospel to his neighbors. Now, that kind of tenacity in Sudan is inspiring. It puts any excuses we might come out up with in the shade.
Well, we are living tragically in a fallen world. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men, the survival of Christian civilization. We're under attack today, and we're losing the battle because most Christians have no idea what's going on, and they're certainly not getting that message from most of the people sitting on the internet. We need to understand behind everything are these powerful spiritual forces that would destroy Christianity and bring about a world government and a new world religion, excluding Christianity. Well, you go right ahead, Peter. We've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, Dr. Stan, I must say that we need to remember that God is sovereign and God is all-powerful and the Bible is powerful and prayer is powerful and the power of truth is powerful. The fact is all the darkness cannot put out the smallest light. It takes a lot of effort to persuade people to believe in a lie. But, you know, the truth has a certain distinctive ring to it. And so, there are many who are deceived today, but the fact is that Jesus Christ has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. We must submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from us. And greater is Christ who is in us than Satan who is in the world. So we need to get more tenacious in our faith. We need to be more vigorous in proclaiming the truth. We mustn't be apologetic for our faith and for our freedoms. We need to stand up and fight. And that's how America became a great and free nation. It was because of people like George Washington standing up and speaking out and fighting against what's evil. Let's get back to that kind of tenacity, because it's not just America's freedom and faith that's at stake. It's the whole world. We are talking about Christian civilization. The future of civilization itself is at stake. We cannot allow the New World Order to usher in a millennium of darkness. We've got to resist the New World Order. It is evil, and we've got to resist this intolerant, violent religion of Islam. And the way that we can do this is by propagating the freedom, the truth that is in Christ. It's the Bible and the Bible alone that is truth, and it's a truth that will set people free.
Amen to that. Well, Sydney, hopefully you'll have a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to reach a lot of people here in the United States and get them aware of the things that we've talked about tonight. And I wish I could come and hear some of your talks. But I appreciate so much your being with us, Peter. It's always a pleasure. And next time you get here, or if you'd like to be on again before you leave, give me a call and we'll get you on again. We have a number of our outlets, and we always love to have you as a guest.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. May God bless each of you listeners. May God bless America.
God bless. Thanks so much. Okay, fine. Well, that was Peter Hammond, and I do hope you've enjoyed Peter. And he's always a pleasure when he comes to the United States, where we usually get a call. We always look forward to having. We book him on all of our programs. Try to get him on to the weekend program as well, so that the people can begin to understand really what we are up against. And basically, we are up against organized evil, and we can call it communism, we can call it radical form of Islam, but all of this, of course, is simply different manifestations of this organized evil that is out there that is directing the course of our nation today. Because we are controlled by a small clique, and behind that small clique, Trilateral Commission, Bilderbergers, Council on Foreign Relations, Masons, Rosicrucians are powerful spiritual forces. Well, this is Dr. Stan. This is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you can give us a hand, we'd love to hear from you. And if you aren't in a position to help and support us, we'd appreciate if you'd pray for Radio Liberty, for our staff, for our family, for our provision, and for our protection. because we're on the front lines of this battle, and believe me, I have a lot of friends who entered the battle and either have been forced out or met very, very strange demises, but be that as it may, we'll be here hopefully as long as God gives us a breath. So if you'd like to be part of our team, our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Now, how do you understand what's going on today? Well, let me suggest you go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and you can pull down different groups of letters, for instance, on the occult hierarchy, or we've taken our letters and put them in little inexpensive pamphlets, the one on the occult hierarchy, probably about 150 pages, it's just our newsletters, but it will give you an insight into who really runs the world, and of course, it's these powerful spiritual forces, but manifested through men. Men, of course, give their allegiance to these spiritual forces. Usually they're very well rewarded. They receive great wealth and fame and fortune, but at a terrible price. And of course, so we recommend you go to our website, read our newsletters, watch our DVDs, listen to our radio programs. And another section there, the one on other videos on the web, I think it says, or videos on the web. And look at these. They're usually 3 or 4 minute YouTubes or other videos. Fascinating information that I think that I'd like you to be able to see. So they're all right there. You just go down, you link a link to those various sites, and I think you'll find it very, very informational. You need, of course, to read our book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or if you can't afford it, go to our website and watch the DVD. And then, of course, you need to hear our talk on the secret or the forbidden secret. The forbidden secret's a little bit longer, more detail. There is a secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years, and certainly it's been passed down to the mystery religions and secret societies and Pythagoras then, and Socrates and Plato and Aristotle and Alexander the Great. And you're never going to be told that these people were all involved in the mysteries. And then, of course, through the Kabbalah and through the Gnostics and then through the black nobility, through the Knights Templar, through the Rosicrucians, all forces that have been there, certainly the Knights of the Golden Garter, the Order of the Garter, 1400 in Great Britain, an organization for the leaders of the world. Order of the Garter, go ahead and read all about it, how Hirohito was a member. Emperor Hirohito of Japan was a member before the Second World War. Then they let him out there during the war, and then, of course, the reason he was never prosecuted after the war, he was a member of the Order of the Garter, where the rulers of the world get together on a regular basis and meet there in London. But you're never going to hear about these secret societies, and you need to understand them. Anyway, of course, you want to get into so many of the other issues, but certainly you can get our writings, our talks at 1-800-544-8927. We're going to be talking to Pastor Joe Schimmel this next hour. Let me suggest his DVD, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. We think that's one of the best things we have to introduce you to this spiritual battle, because many of the people within the music industry have made a deal, and they've gotten tremendous wealth and advantage, but at a terrible cost. Now, many of the people in politics have done exactly the same thing, and they have made a deal with the supernatural force that runs the world and the other world as well. There is a spiritual dimension. There is a supernatural realm. It's not imaginary. It's very real. If you're a Christian, you have to believe in the supernatural, because Christ did all sorts of supernatural things. And basically, of course, the evil forces from the other side can do that as well. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and protection.